Third. So we talk about why, we talk about how, we talk about what. Establish an ongoing ministry strategy that serves the church and utilizes TFI as a resource partner. Here's what I mean by that. We want to not develop codependent relationships where the church is dependent upon TFI constantly moving them forward, but we do want to establish these ongoing partnerships. This is what we can do together. And to clearly outline that for churches. So a church never wonders, what exactly does TFI do? What exactly is our partnership with TFI? Well, it's very clear. There's a very clear path. It's very clearly scripted. We do this, and we do this together, and we do this together, and we do this together. This is the movement that we are a part of together. They act as a bridge organization for us. They act as a resourcing agency for us. This is what we do together, and this is how we do it. When we talk about movement, when we talk about change, change is not always negative. A lot of times we think we need to change that. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that something's wrong. We're constantly changing. We're constantly evolving. That's what a Starfish organization does. We're constantly moving and learning. The landscape of foster care is constantly changing. The language that we can and cannot use. The new popular thing, resources that are out there and that aren't out there. It's constantly changing. So we want to grab onto that change and really be intentional in that change. And there's some fantastic resources out there about really pillars of change and movement. What are the ingredients of a movement? And it begins with, number one, shrinking the problem. Two, grow the people. Three, chart the path. And so we'll walk through these and then we'll do some roundtable. When we talk about shrink the problem, we do this, scale the numbers down. This isn't just foster care related. This is in general. Corporations, we've got this big problem. Well, let's shrink it down. Let's make it tangible and applicable for people. In our unique context, we have a really massive crisis on our hands. But we've got to scale it down for our churches and for our people. We have to approach our churches in a scaled down way. We're not asking you to solve the 450,000 kids. We're not even asking you to solve the however many hundreds of thousands right here in your own county. What we're asking you to do is, we are inviting you to consider is, how can you impact this local office? Just this, not 450,000 kids, but one local office, or 10 kids, or these five families. We're scaling the problem down for them, and it does a couple of things. It helps them to see the actionable items more clearly. I can't see 450,000. And here's the problem. An illustration I use a lot is, and I hate to use it here, because this is like Chick-fil-A, this is like Nirvana or Chick-fil-A, right? But Chick-fil-A is one of our favorite places to eat. And it's actually a very unhealthy place to eat, but it's so good. In Chick-fil-A, again, I'm reminded over and over again, we're people that we will discard facts and information for the sake of our own personal satisfaction. So we were at our friend's induction ceremony. He became an operator of Chick-fil-A, and all the corporate guys are there. And one of them says that something like 68% of their annual revenue came from the number one value meal, sandwich, fries, and drink. So the overwhelming majority of their money comes from this one meal that happens to be one of the most unhealthy meals on the menu. But it's so good, right? So if you came to me and said, and it's the equivalent of about 1,200 calories, which is a lot if you're a calorie person. If you came to me and said, Jason, I want to lose 15 pounds. Can you help me? I'd say, absolutely. Tell me, let's start here. What do you eat every day? Well, I eat the number one diet meal at Chick-fil-A every day. I would say, you probably should stop eating that because it's 1,200 calories. You would say, yeah, but I mean, what's a calorie really? Never seen one, never held one, never touched one. I have no experience with one. There are these things that people tell me exist out there, but I've never actually seen them. They're like these invisible little evil things out there. And then 1,200, that just is a lot. I don't even know what to do with that. That's too big for me. I'm going to discard those facts for the sake of my own personal satisfaction. I'm going to continue to eat the number one value meal. But if I were to scale it down and say that the equivalence of 1,200 calories is about four Snickers bars, then we're talking in terms that we can all relate to. Every one of us can imagine what it feels like to hold four Snickers bars in our hands. We can have an experience with that. We've seen one, we've eaten one, we know what that feels like. Now we've gone from 1,200 things that you've never seen, you know are out there, but you've never seen them, down to four things that you can see and feel and touch. And I would suggest that unless you're just desperate or a gross person, you're not going to eat four Snickers bars for lunch. But on a calorie level, maybe two, maybe three, maybe one, on a calorie level, it's the equivalent. And what we're doing is we're not dumbing down the problem. We're not pretending like the problem doesn't exist. We're just scaling down the problem. Because the truth is this, is that when we start using these big numbers and there's a big problem and it's crisis, here's our appeal often. We don't mean it this way, but the need is overwhelming. It's super hard. It's really hard. DHS is awful. It's really hard. It's really hard. Read this blog about how hard it is. You guys should do it. And churches are going, man, that was the absolute worst pitch ever for anything. Right? We're not dumbing down the fact that there's a need. We're not dumbing down the fact that it's hard. We're simply saying, when we say that there's thousands of foster kids, the average person says, yeah, I've heard that. I've never seen one, felt one, touched one. I have no experience with one. And thousands, man, that's, I don't even know where to start with that. But if we say, but there's one office here, or there's five kids here, or there's two families here, it's much more difficult for us to discard that information. And it backs us into a corner in a good way and helps us to really wrestle with the fact that I might not be able to do something about 1,200 invisible things I can't see, but I really have no excuse as to why I can't do something for that one. I can definitely do something for that. It's much more difficult for us to discard. So when we talk about shrinking the problem, we talk about scaling it down so that it's more relevant and applicable to our churches and to our people in such a way that it's much more difficult for them to discard it. People find it more motivating to be partly finished with a longer journey than to be at the starting point of a shorter one. Research shows that this is fundraising goals. If my goal is to raise $100,000, I'm not going to launch a campaign with, we want to raise 100, we have zero. I'm going to say we want to raise 100,000 and we already have someone that's given 20. We're 20% of the way there. Join the movement, right? What they don't know is that really my goal was 80,000, but I've set 100 and I've said we've already had 20. Because now I have 80 to raise, which was my original goal in the first place. Make sense? People are more willing to jump into a longer journey that's already started than to start something, so a shorter journey from the starting point. That's Dave Ramsey's theory with debt. Don't fight the big ones first. Knock out the little ones first. Because it'll give you a sense of accomplishment. And what we're doing is we're charting hope for people. We're saying, yes, the journey is long. We're scripting out hope for them. The journey is long and the need is great. But there's hope. We're already this way, this part of the way there, right? And so that's the message that we're communicating with our churches. The need is not all on you. The burden is not all on you. We already have some fantastic church partners that are already around the table. And creating even this fear of missing out culture. You're missing out if you're not a part of this. Or yeah, we have this need, but this work has already been done. And we're inviting you to jump into the movement that's already occurring. A sense of urgency must be tempered by a scalable plan to help churches respond in a way that fits their rhythm and culture. The last thing that we want to do is bum rush our pastor's office with some emotional plea of, you know, we were up all night with our foster kids, DHS, the phone call from them this morning was unexpected and completely ridiculous. You know, my other kid is throwing up, and now I'm going to go to my pastor's office and make sure that he knows just how overwhelming the need is and how important it is. Probably not the right time, right? What our church leaders don't need is this overwhelming emotional, you know, sense of urgency. What they need is a scalable plan. Show me, how does this fit into who we are and how can we actually engage with it? Because I've emailed my pastor 50 times and I've called him and I went to his office and the secretary said he wasn't there even though I saw him in the window. And then I knocked on his door late that night and, you know, he called the cops and me, and I don't understand why he won't call me back or email me back. Well, maybe the approach is a little off, but right? Let's approach them with a scalable plan that, they can really sink their teeth into, that helps them do their job of wanting to steward and shepherd the flock that God's entrusted to them well. So we shrink the problem, and as we shrink the problem, we grow our people. And this goes back to our discipleship. We shrink the problem, and we grow our people. We make the problem small and the people big. We speak discipleship-oriented language. We grow our people in their identity that everyone can do something. For our people, their initial pushback is going to be, well, I can't do everything. Fantastic. But everyone can do something. And the opportunities to get involved are as unique and diverse as each individual member of our churches. I've had pastors that I've gone to preach at their church, and I like to talk to them before I go, because that's what I would want to do. Somebody's going to preach at our church. Who is this guy? And I've had pastors say, I'm glad you're coming. My concern is I just don't want our church to become all about foster care and adoption. And on one hand, you think, I'm going to replay what you just said for you so you can hear what you just said. Right? But on the other hand, I understand completely where he's coming from. I don't want somebody to stand in front of our church and say, if you really love Jesus, then you'll foster kids. Because that's, and I agree, that's not a helpful or biblical message. What we want to communicate with church leaders is this idea that the message for them, the script for them, we're helping them know how to do this well. And they operate under this strange assumption that we've somehow projected on them, that they need to really tell all their people to adopt and foster. And we have to debunk that and deconstruct that and say, no, the message for your people that you have the platform to communicate is, look, we're not all called to do the same thing, but we're all capable of doing something. And for some, it's going to be this, and some, it's going to be this. That's the language that a pastor in a church leader needs to hear, because they're leading ministries of people that are unique and diverse. And I can't just stand up on stage and say, if you really love Jesus, you'll adopt every orphan in Africa, because that just doesn't seem, we'd say, yeah, please don't. So we want to help them know how to grow their people, and that's part of the language. Provide resources, equipping opportunities, all these things that we've already talked about. So we shrink the problem, we grow the people, and finally we chart the path. Is the way forward clear? Where are we going and how do we get there? Do people know where to go and who to talk to? This is a great question to bring into the churches you're working on. If I visited your church for 4 weeks, we were a new family. We walked in, we clearly have a passion for foster care, and we walked into your church for 4 weeks, in and out. That's all we did. Dropped our kids off, sat through the service, picked our kids up, and left. After 4 weeks, if you sat us down and said, after 4 weeks being here, tell us what's important in our church. What do we value the most? Would it be clear to me that this church cares about foster care? Ask that question to church-based foster care ministers all the time. Is it clear in your church that this church cares about this? And when you're working with decision makers at the church, they usually look at each other like, man, I don't know, we need to figure that out. Yeah. And then the next question is, do I know where to go and who to talk to about this? Is the path clear in the church? Has that been charted clearly? Because if I don't know where to go or who to talk to about this, I'm not going to go anywhere to talk to anybody about it. That's true for all of life. If my marriage is suffering, I don't know where to go or who to talk to. If I feel led towards foster care, if I feel called towards this in some way as a family, do I know at my church where to go and who to talk to about this? These are great questions to be asking the churches that we're working with, and then helping them provide the solutions for that. To use things that they already use within their church. If something's important at your church and you want everybody to know about it, how do you chart that path for them? If there's a membership class coming up, we'll put it on the website, we'll announce it a few weeks, we'll have materials and employers, something printed in the bulletin. Great. Now, how do we tap into that? How do we tap into things that already exist in our church? How do we chart that path to help people know where to go and who to talk to? Where are we going and how are we getting there? What looks like resistance is often just a lack of clarity. It's not that our people don't care, it's that they just don't know where to go to care or how to care. So can we make the path clear for our people? These are fantastic questions to be asking your church, your churches. And when we talk about charting the path, we're not talking about we need to start new, everything new. It's really leveraging the existing. What already exists in your church, and how can we utilize that? Meaning, what communication portals already exist in your church, and how can we get this event or this ministry into that pipeline? What discipleship environments already exist at your church? For us, it's small groups. So we leverage small groups for everything that we do at our church. You can't do anything at our church without being in a small group. Because we say that is our primary discipleship vehicle. That's where we disciple and pastor people. All the way from benevolence to counseling to foster care wraparound teams. We already have small groups of round groups of people in our church. So for us, it's not why would we take a foster family and try to create a new round group of people around them to be their support. Instead, let's just do what we already do, which is in order to do anything, we need you to be in a small group, and that you already have that team wrapped around you. So we're not having to recreate wraparound teams or recreate support teams. We already have that mechanism that exists in our church. So it's helping church leaders think through what already exists here. You don't have to start new layers of ministry all the time. You can utilize what already exists to help them think through some of those things. The path is clear already for a lot of other things in the church. How can we infuse this into that path so that it's clear for people? I'll show you a couple slides and then we're done. We'll do a couple of minutes of discussion and head over to lunch at noon. For you, it could look like this as a team. You're not only for you as a leadership team, but also for the teams that you're working with at churches. You can help them develop out, let's just say for this, totally an example, but a calendar path. Where are we headed in the next 12 months? Where are we headed in the next 6 months? Let's script this out and let's plan this out so we know what's coming, when it's coming, and how we need to do it. So it could be we do 4 big events a year, let's say. We leverage what already exists. We don't have to recreate something. There's Work on Sunday, there's Foster Care Awareness Month, there's things that already exist. There's backpack drives. Those are going to be church-wide things. Everybody's going to know about it. But then underneath that, what I call dripping, if we fire hydrant these big events, we're going to have our people drink from the fire hydrant. Every once in a while, we need to offer just little drip opportunities. It's like Chinese water torture. We're just going to drip on you all the time. You're never going to get away from it. And those are just simple opportunities throughout the year. We're going to tell this story on this Sunday, or pastor's going to preach this sermon and use this illustration, or we're going to have this informational meeting, or just lower level, low hanging fruit that is engaging our people. It might be helpful for you as a team to sit down and chart out what does our next 12 months look like, and then to help church leaders chart out. Here's the path that you can engage in, and we can partner with as we develop this partnership together. So it's no longer kind of this fly by the seat of our pants, if it feels like that for you. This needs come up, I'm going to call the church now, or this new thing has happened, we're going to react and engage our church. We can be more proactive. We know it's coming, we know when it's coming. The churches are clear about that. They're able to promote it with their people. And as a team, we're way out ahead of this thing.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
One thing, I want to take a picture of me with all the way. But, so is this your plan for us as a TFI team, this is our schedule, or we're actually doing this with our partner churches?
I think your TFI team needs to know,
yeah,
here's our primary objective.
But we're including our church partners that we've...
You're helping them develop their plan as well. Not your plan for them. You're helping them develop their plan.
Right.
You.
I know.
But for your team, yeah, I think it's helpful for your team
Definitely.
To know, here's the priorities for us over the next 12 months. Here's our big events. Here's the things that are coming down the pipeline. But maybe for your church, it can look like this. This is, again, completely an example. Here's a path for a church who says, we're going to launch this ministry. And we're going to preach a sermon about it. Or we're going to do Orphan Sunday, the whole church. And then we're going to follow up with an informational meeting or a lunch in 3 weeks, 3 weeks from that. But we're not going to do steps. We're not going to do step one until we already have step two worked out, so that at step one, we can announce step two. We're not going to do step one. And I would suggest, our Orphan Sunday people hate it when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Don't do Orphan Sunday if you don't have number two locked and ready to go. It actually is, I'm convinced, it's counterproductive. We get everybody hyped up and they're all excited, and then there's nothing, right? So this could be a path. We're going to launch this ministry, and we're going to preach on it, do an informational meeting. We're going to connect people into a small group around a curriculum that, I know of a really great one out there, as a matter of fact. Or whatever is in our church, we're small group or Sunday school or whatever it is, Wednesday night equipping class. We're going to move people along this path, and we're going to help them identify what their next steps are. We're going to get smaller and smaller. And then Next quarter, we're going to do it again. This is our cycle. This is our path. This is how we engage people and draw them into this process. And I'm convinced that TFI, as an advocate in your team, this is this ongoing partnership path that you all can be involved in. And it can look different for your churches, but we can help you here. We can help you here. We can help you here. And then we've got the action points for you here. We can help you at every step along this path. We have resources to help you with it. We are walking with you. What most agencies and organizations want is, hey, we heard you're doing this. Can we set up a table out in the foyer? Mm-hmm. And then like two people, it's usually like a grandma and you know, a six-year-old kid stop by the table and they get a flyer and they leave frustrated because nobody stopped by our table. Well, because you're not really a part of the culture and the path of the church. You just came in to kind of try to leech off of what they're doing. So this is just an ongoing path that you guys can develop, and it can be opposite. For a lot of churches, you've got to work backwards. We're going to start small in community first, and then we're going to invite more people into that. And then we're going to keep working and pray to God that maybe one day he opens up an opportunity for this to really be leveraged church-wide. But you identify, what path do we need to take in this church? What are the steps moving forward? And where can CFI strategically partner each step along the way? Not in a codependent way. As a church, this is the church's path, the church's plan. This isn't TFI's plan. We're just saying, let's help you develop that out the plan for you that fits you, and then here's how we can help you every step of the way.